Hey guys, Barney here. I just want to take a quick moment to talk about the program that brings the Big Top to life, Zencastr. I use Zencastr for all my recordings, and since taking over the Big Top fully, I have actually tried other systems, but I ended up sticking with Zencastr. It's so easy to use. You don't have to download anything. Just log in using your browser and start recording a high-quality podcast right away. It records studio-quality sound and up to 4K video with guests, along with a full suite of professional tools that let you produce and publish all from one dashboard. Being a creator has genuinely never been easier. And I love that I can send a simple link to my guests and we can record over a video call wherever they are in the world. Also, if you're like me and cannot stand the sound of your voice, Zencastr's built-in post-production process makes such a difference. It automatically removes ums and ahs, awkward pauses, reduces background noise, and makes me sound so much better. Plus, the Hobbyist and Creator Plus accounts are always free to use, and their professional accounts are free to try for 14 days, no credit card required. Go to Zencastr.com/pricing and use my code BIGTOP, and you'll get 30% off your first month of any Zencastr paid plan. I want you to have the same easy experience as I do for all my podcasting and content needs. It's time to share your story. You ever drunk Baileys from a shoe? And welcome to The Big Top. I am your host, Barney, and today I am joined by Pup Ace, whose community work goes as far as developing mentorship programs for all kinds of pet players and other critters. We actually got so wrapped up in our chat that we ran over, so to save time, I'm going to skip straight to the good stuff. But just quickly, as always, please send in your kinky stories to thebigtop.pod@gmail.com. That's thebigtop.pod@gmail.com, and rate and review if you get the chance. Today, the circus is in Austin, Texas, and I invite you to join me as we go under the Big Top. But yeah, hey puppy, welcome to the Big Top.
Hello.
Yeah, no, I totally want to circle back to the work thing, because I just got back from Chicago, and there's a good friend of mine out there that I was staying with, and we ended up talking about a lot of things. And look, I'm not like trying to shit on America, that's like, but he gets 4 days off.
Yeah.
He gets 4 days in a year. He gets 4 days off.
Oh. Oof.
Why isn't that illegal? Anyway.
And you and me both are asking that. Don't worry.
What? Anyway, I just thought that was so crazy. And listen, I just started a new job. And like, this is an entry-level muggle job just to pay the bills while, you know, I'm between gigs. I get 32 days off. Like, that's just...
Yeah, going into the workforce for sure, I made it a point that if somebody was not willing to offer me at the very least a good 20 days off alongside their holidays that they have off, like, I'm not taking the job.
Oh, well, because you also separate it into paid and unpaid, which is like...
Well, yeah, so 20 days of paid time off is what I usually request alongside with the holidays that are paid time off. Some people like to clump them in and be like, oh, well, those are part of your 20s. Like, no, that doesn't count. You can get over yourself.
There shouldn't be unpaid days. It's just like, you were meant to be employed. Anyway, this is so pointless and has nothing to do with anything. It just makes me so mad. Ugh. Yeah, no, sorry. The recon thing. So, I mean, like, in general, I was so drawn to your Twitter because, I mean, it's always great to see, you know, a pup involved in the community and talking about the things that matter. And so, yeah, I was really drawn to the fact you talk about things like, you know, being here to make connections and spreading the joy of kink first and foremost and all that. And I was like, this sounds like a really cool, like, person to talk to. And then I found your recon and I read the whole thing and I was like, oh my God, yeah. And that's why I sent you that today.
Doing a little research on me now, aren't you?
Hell yeah, because hey, hi, hello, you like vetted me, which I was very like, oh, okay, because nobody ever does that. They're always just like, oh yeah, I'll be on your podcast, that sounds cool. And I'm like, yeah, great. And you were like, is your podcast worth anything? Can you tell me something about it? Who do you ask about me? Who was saying things about me? I want to know.
Yeah, and it's, I don't think it's a thing of worth in the way that most people think of value, usually dealing with some sort of financial or political resource. For me, it's more like, what sort of conversation are we going to have? What are we discussing? How are we growing each other? How are we growing both of our audiences? And I mean, is there sincerity in the want to do this? Like, I don't care if a podcaster has one follower or a million followers. I want to be sure that the time that we spend is very worthwhile to, at the very least, myself and the person doing the podcast.
Well, I knew we were going to get on because first of all, I love honesty. And what I really love about Kink is that it has allowed me to be honest in my life. You know, I've made this whole kink positivity thing my mission because I suffered for years, like really, really thinking otherwise. And fuck that. Like, I'm so glad that I managed to break through that wall in my mind, because now I'm all about showing people that, hey, it's okay to be yourself. And like, yeah, there's a level of vulnerability that comes with that. But that's allowed me to be more open. And so that's why I'm really like, you know, I'm dedicated to keeping the kind of grassroots feel to this thing, because, you know, I want it to be authentic and I want it to be kind of like, you know, in support of the niche nooks of the, because hey, niche. Like, hello, Table for One.
Truly.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that that is a big part of what people don't quite understand when it comes reaching out to the kink community. It can be really difficult for some people because they'll just say like, oh, I'm down for anything. Or, hey, I'm here just to like network and meet friends. Or they'll come up with some sort of generic something or other. And people do this whether they're on networking apps or on social media apps more often than not. Then they come out disappointed that they haven't met anybody, that they haven't come across the same interests, that they haven't come across quote unquote good people. And I think the part that they're missing is that they need to be sincere in what they're looking for. One, like, say, oh, I am looking to get into roleplay. I am a total novice at it. I would like to experience what it is like to be on the floor and hogtied and or with my legs all bent up, or, you know, the sensations of rope going across my body or something like that. Like, be very specific about that. Two, they also need to let people know that they're a real person. I think that a lot of times we forget that, getting caught up in the want of our pleasures, that we forget to tell people like, oh, hey, like, I really want that, but also realize that I am a person. I am here to have fun, and I have all these other interests too. So, you know, this is how we can get to know each other and warm up. Even with the Anon stuff, like, I get it, you're into the Anon stuff, but just say you're into the Anon stuff. That's totally cool. But
yeah. But there's like doing something that, because what are we doing here if we're not like hanging out? The kink is an opportunity for us to connect. And if you're trying to do, and hey, look, I also understand what being closeted is. Look, I did this for a long time. I was lurking. I didn't want to give any identifying information about myself to anyone. And so I was really closed off with the people that I was kind of having, like, you know, online sort of role play, because that was all I was willing to do. You know, I get that. I've been that person. But they're also, when you are ready to embrace more of this life and more of yourself, like, it's funny to me how people forget to kind of, or are not interested in like putting the person before the kink. Because to me, that's like all part of sex. It's like, I want to get to know you, because otherwise, I don't know if I want to play with you. Like, that's just my sort of, I know it doesn't work like that for everyone, but
yeah. And I think that that's something with the very like Anon and like not being available, whatever it's called, I forgot it, they have an acronym for it,
slut.
But that, I'm blanking so bad right now. Anyways.
DL, being on the...
Being on the DL. And there's just so many things that come with some of the riskier forms of play.
Oh,
anonymous
for sure.
Sex, that's a lot easier to say, like, hey, are you on your medications? Are you currently under an active infection that is transmittable?
Yeah.
And, you know, these are the positions I like. This is nice and generic, but like rope being one of my bigger things, any sort of like compromising power exchange positions in which you might not have a say in something, and being able to establish those like red, yellows, and greens.
Yeah.
In, you know, some of the piercing play that goes on out there. How far do you take roles specifically, even if it's not a total power exchange? Like, how far are you willing to get into specific roles or be age regressed or, you know, be as much of a critter as you're being forced into being an animal? Or, you know, all these things, they take so much information from your own personal general knowledge, from general like anatomy, physiology, those sorts of things, some general psychology,
huge amount of psychology,
even just being trauma informed too, like people have things that they might not have worked through and you might not be aware of them, and you need to stop a scene because of that.
And hey, also, like, never forget, I think something that doesn't get talked about enough is like how important it is to be upfront about things like that. Like, if you're doing a scene which you know is going to potentially touch on something that is very heavy or very triggering for you, you know, it is your responsibility to just say, oh, hey, by the way, you know, we just need to be aware of this thing, because, you know, it's important not just to be mindful of each other, but it's also important to be like, hey, this is how you can be mindful of me. Because, you know, at the end of the day, this is all a negotiation. It's all a like, you know, this is what I like, this is what you like, how can we do something fun together? To that end, I wanted to ask, because I know that your sort of whole persona is pup, but bondage is very, very heavy for you. Was that like the first big kink for you?
Yes. So rope has always been a thing for me. As far as I can remember, I've always found it alluring. I've always found some form of like string or tape or rope or something that I hid away under the boards of my of my bed and stuff like that from my parents. And, you know, with friends.
Wait, so just to have, like, as a kid?
Yeah, just to have. And I mean, I would use it in ways that I thought were the right ones. I would learn knots from, like, knot books and stuff like that.
Oh, cool.
In the library or from Boy Scout friends or something like that. I would somehow subtly elude or make games that would involve some sort of, like, capture or something like that in order to be able to use some of these techniques or general displays of bondage as a whole when being younger. And it wasn't until I got a little older and maybe just a little young to actually be on these sites, but a little older, that I was able to see some of the more intricate work of the more beautiful style or kimbakubi style that people talk about. It was pretty rope. It was done really nicely. And from that also, as I got older and as I explored more of the scene, I got to see some of the heavier stuff, dealing with tape or dealing with cuffs or dealing with more restrictive, like larger set pieces like arm binders or straitjackets or other heavier cuffs and hoods and all of that. And so that really is my first and primary fetish. Fetish kink, people have things to define them or whatever, but sure. There is a lot of I guess I should call it more a kink than a fetish. I do not require it for the very, very limited amounts of times in which I've felt any sort of sexual attraction or that I have interacted sexually with anybody else. So it's a kink, but it is something that does bring me some sort of arousal way more regularly than any other sort of interaction that I tend to have. So yes, that one would be my primary thing, my primary kink, and was my first one, and I just kind of just stayed that way, even through all these other exploration I've done.
I guess, look, I come from the perspective of being like, I knew from day one I was into this like wacko, you know, bizarre thing. Was this something that was kind of weird for you growing up, or did it kind of make sense that you were like, oh, this is just this thing that I like, and you could kind of very innocently explore it?
Yeah, I would describe it as it was just something that I liked.
Cool.
There was, of course, some sort of like cultural against it, like this is out of the normal, or this is only used by people that want to hurt other people or stuff like that. But I didn't want it to be that way. I didn't want it to be negative. I enjoyed it and I explored it because I enjoyed it and I found pleasure in it. And I figured that others might also enjoy this sort of, whenever it comes to capture in general, there is a little bit of role playing. There is a little bit of sadism and masochism going on with it, that it was a very positive thing for me rather than such a negative thing that so many other people put it, or in such a negative light that so many other people put it in.
I mean, that's how it should be, right? It's like, it should be, oh, I've discovered this thing about myself and I just like that. And that's cool. And like, I don't know. I think it was, who said this? Who said this? Oh, I think it was Trixie Mattel. but who said something along the lines of, like, being queer isn't hard, but straight people make it hard. And that really, like, stuck with me, because I was like, yeah, like, being kinky isn't hard. It's just, it's natural. It's normal. It feels like, okay, this is just, like, whatever. And then it's society telling you that that's not normal that makes it difficult, and that gives us all these, like, confusing, conflicting feelings around it. And I love that kind of, at least you had seemingly a lot more of a positive initial kind of thought around it. I've seen you in, like, latex and leather and stuff like that. Is that something that, like, is big for you, or was it kind of like you found pup play and then that's more of an aesthetic kind of thing?
So pup play was probably one of the last things that I... let's go back a little bit. Pup play is one of the back half of my, like, initial explorations into kink as a whole.
Uh-huh.
So I did come across latex and leather and these general, like, thinner materials, or just, like, different sensation type of materials.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the biggest thing about these things, is the sensation that they have, like the feel of leather, the feel of latex, the feel of spandex nylon blends from, like, sportswear or just, like, general gear. And the feel of it is so unique and has different textures, and it is so cool to, like, touch and feel and be like, wow, look at this, like, embroidery that's here, or look at this material that's here. And secondary to that, but not too far behind, is just the aesthetic of it. The different ways that it forms the different people's bodies, and the different ways that it sort of brings out, like, specific points of popping with, like, whatever logos or designs are on specific parts of the body as well. I mean, the aesthetic is just very sexy, whether it's from leather itself sort of being some matte, mildly shiny, just thick, strong look, latex being this very, very slick and skin tight and very slimming sort of look, and, you know, sportswear as a whole just sort of giving the different accentuations of the muscle groups that are supposed to be used better during whatever sort of sports that they're supposed to be used in. All of these different things just kind of come together in that way. And it's very, very fun. It's very appealing to me. And I wouldn't say that it's necessarily appealing to me in an arousing way, in the more sexual way. Not even 90% of the time, but still it's sexy. It looks good. It's fun to look at. And I'm like, ah, you look so good in that. That is amazing.
Yeah, I, it's so interesting to hear you talk about it, because my journey to all these kinks was so different. And, like, I'm way more about the, I don't know, kind of like the mind fucky aspects of, you know, I like a lot of forced play, and I like a lot of humiliation, and I like a lot of, like, transformation and weird wacky scenarios. And so textures and sensations and that kind of thing has never really been big for me. And I got into these things very much as an aesthetic kind of thing. And so it's so cool to hear, like, how we all kind of can end up at these similar places, but so, like, so differently. Hey, this is why I do people rather than topics. It's like, you know, these are all such personal parts of ourselves that, like, people talk so differently about the same thing. And, like, and also, hey, there's no right or wrong way to talk about this stuff, you know, and we're not here to be perfect. And, like, the way that, like, I would describe what I enjoy about, like, latex and leather, and also the thing I enjoy about pup play, like, dude, to me, it's so crazy that pup play has just become, it's just the thing. There's so many people who aesthetically do it, either, you know, for the anonymity or the sort of safety, or, you know, whatever else it is, you know, because a lot of the time just putting on a hood can make you feel, you know, like you're, I guess, part of the pack, or like you can blend in more, or you can hide an insecurity, or you can, I guess, you know, you kind of dress up. It's kind of Halloween-y. But then also it's just become, whether or not you actually engage with the pup play side of things, whether or not you do the headspace stuff, whether or not you just kind of like the look, that to me was always like, oh, that's what the fetish people do. And I don't get that. So clearly I'm not cool enough for the pups, because they must be really cool. And cut to finding out that puppies are just like cute, derpy dorks. I mean, literally, like, booping each other's noses. I'm like, this is what I do with, like, clown make, it's the same thing. And then it just, like, all clicked for me, and I was like, oh, this can be fun and silly.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of fetishists or kinksters forget exactly how silly all of this is. Anything role-playing wise, everything into the BDSM spectrum.
Thank you.
It's so...
All of it is so serious.
Yes, all of it really is. And people take it so seriously because they want to be in this sort of headspace of like pleasure and continual like for something or other that is just so out of their norm, which, yes, it is. But also, if you come into a room and you see somebody tied up getting whacked by a big old stick... It's reminiscent of a lot of like early cartoons, whether they were from the 40s all the way even to like today. This sort of like slapstickness to it all.
Totally.
And the way that, you know, people in the more vanilla sort of sphere of things look at it and laugh at it and can make a joke out of it. Like it is silly. It is like, don't take this as seriously as that.
Well, because also taking it seriously is silly. You know, it's like, well, you're role playing, you're literally just, you know, like it's like improv, you know what I mean? Like even the act of taking it really, really seriously and getting into that headspace, whether it's just from an outside perspective or not, it is silly. And that's why I'm kind of like, why wouldn't you want to laugh? Like, why wouldn't you want to combine those things?
Absolutely. There is just so much to it. And it is such an act. And in some ways, it could even be considered like theater. People need to realize that this is still an entertainment thing. It is still a pleasure thing, even if you're living it out as a lifestyle. Like it is a lifestyle role play. And you gotta have fun with it, and you gotta be very sincere with it and honest and open, because this is a thing you enjoy and it brings you a lot of fun and pleasure and everything in all sorts of ways. Take it seriously as you need to for you to enjoy it. But don't tell others to take it that seriously, because it is not that serious.
Right. Well, it also makes me think like, man, do I feel bad? Not like feel bad, but I pity the people who are so wrapped up in what their warped concept of, you know, morality is, that they think, oh, how shameful that is, or how disgusting that is, or whatever. And it's like, Don't you just have something in your life, something about yourself that you're like, I just enjoy this and I just want to enjoy it. I just want to indulge in it. I mean, I don't know. It makes me really think, like, when you hear these people kind of talk about like how wrong they think what you're doing is, it's like, do you not have anything like that, that you don't understand what this, like, I love having this like dope, cool, funny, silly, stupid, weird, wacky, kinky thing that I just get to enjoy. It's like, if putting on a pup hood and just being silly and hanging out with your friends and doing whatever it is that feels good, or whatever pleasure-seeking activities you want to do together, how is that not fine and beautiful to everyone? That I just don't get. And I feel sorry for those people, because I feel like you must be missing out on that in your life. However you get it.
Let's also talk about vocabulary. Vocabulary is such a strong thing, but definitions to categorize things, or labels, as a lot of people like to call them, are very gray. They're a very fuzzy logic type thing. So, you know, if you label something as weird, well, how weird is it really according to perspective, you know? Or how much, like, say you're a dom. Well, a lot of people, for whatever reason, stereotypically are like, oh, a dom is somebody that's hard and tough and doesn't take no for an answer and will do all these sorts of things without caring for other things. But whenever we talk about role playing for fetish, that's just not an okay thing. It's not healthy. Right. And so how do you break some of these definitions in order for them to become something more normalized, more healthy, more freeing and expressive, rather than these sorts of oppressive and limiting sort of things? And I only think about that because I was thinking about pup play. Its roots are in leather. Its roots is in DNS. And it does have a lot of definitions. All these kinks do. Pet play specifically, as it is one of my focus, it has all these definitions that people should know because they're historical things. They give context as to why so many things are done the way they are, whether it's the gear, whether it's the behavior, whether it's the positions, all of that. And I think that people should be aware of that, but they don't have to take it so seriously, and they don't have to adhere to those very specific things. They can break out of that mold a bit, or so it's a certain amount. It's still pup play. It's still a fun thing, you know?
Right. Like, your version of how you play is that's how you play. That's it. It's not more or less the thing. There is no definitive like way of doing pup play. There is no definitive way of enjoying. There is no definition for any of these things. And in fact, like that point about like this idea of the dom, like that behavior, that is abusive behavior. If somebody genuinely behaves like that, they are abusing you. They are not being a dominant. What we're doing here is play. Like we are acting out these sometimes very extreme things because that's, you know, a big part of what kink is. It's subversive. Like we're safely enjoying these things. And I quite like being a soft dom. I prefer like more of a kind of, you know, when I'm being, you know, forced to.
Let's hear that sound effect one more time for the audience.
Oh, you know, just like a classic. It's getting cartoonier the more I do it. But then, like, you know, I really like this idea of nurture and praise and that kind of stuff is just as valid as a form of domination, like encouragement, that kind of thing. That's not to say I can't turn on the harder dom stuff, but there's so many different ways to do it and there's so many different ways to have fun with it. You mentioned DNS. Would you like to explain that for the people at home?
Well, simply putting it, let's go through BDSM, right? BDSM, the one thing that is always certain about BDSM is that B stands for bondage. Mm-hmm. Beautiful, wonderful. I think that is pretty self-descriptive, but just in case for anybody that's out there, bondage includes any form of restraint. So whether that is that you're roping somebody up, you're cuffing somebody up in such a way that their movement is restricted, you have some sort of a bar to fetter their arms and legs, you're tying them to a pole, you're using tape to like gag them or keep their head from moving as much, like any of these things that are just limiting as a whole.
Balloons
as well. Look, you can use pieces of clothing.
Oh yeah, you can use shoelaces, like whatever.
Like you can use anything, any material that you want to use that is going to restrict somebody else's normal operations. Bondage. That okay. is bondage.
As a bondage person, I want to ask you your thoughts on balloon bondage. Okay. But, sorry, finish talking about DNS.
That's fine. So then we move on to the D, and this is where people start kind of breaking apart what D, S, and M kind of stand for. And so D can stand for discipline in certain ways of defining B, D, S, and M, or it can be split into D and S. So dominance and submission would be the DNS side of things, or D to encompass all of that would be considered. Oops, sorry, I've got a burp.
Please, by the way, burp loudly and burp, because the long-standing tradition on this podcast is that I just rip burps into this microphone. So,
oh gosh, if I could burp loudly, I would. I do not. I am such a quiet burper.
God damn it! Fine, I'll be disgusting, and you can.
I'm sorry. I'm a quiet dog.
I'm going to tell everybody that as soon as the recording stopped, you just started ripping nasty burps straight. It's all a ruse.
But yes, so again, going back to that, the D or DNS ends up being D, that kind of encompasses all of that being called discipline, DNS standing for dominant and submissive or domination and submission. And I like to encompass it as just D as in discipline, because a lot of this comes to sort of role playing some sort of figure of authority with some sort of figure of receptiveness towards this authority. So discipline on its own can also be personal. I am a person that carries a personal discipline. I self-lock. It is my thing. I don't have a handler. I'm not a puppy to anybody. Or you could even say the opposite is true, that I am a handler to everybody and a puppy to everybody. The key thing for that sort of like anything of me having to do with discipline or general like authority versus or authority with reception of that authority, it comes from a place of respect. Mm-hmm. If you're being respectful towards me and you want to treat me like a puppy and you're talking to me and being like, know that I am human and you just want to bring out the best aspects of puppy play out of me, I will be a puppy for you. If you are some sort of critter, whether they're a kitten, a bunny, a pony, a dragon, and a griffin, whatever the hell sort of mystical creatures that the furries have invented for themselves, you come up to me and you're cuddling me and you have been respectful so far and you've asked like what my limitations are here or there, or you are cautious of the way that you interact with me, and then, you know, because some critters go nonverbal, right?
Sure, yeah, yeah.
And they're doing nonverbal cues that are very like questioning to make sure that everything's good. I will gladly be some sort of like caretaker for you. I will gladly take care of you and I will make sure that you're good and I will call you a good boy, a good girl, a wonderful creature of any sort, and we'll have a good time doing so. So that is from a very light and pet play perspective form of DNS, but this also extends over to all other people that want to have some sort of other figure compared to receiving type of person. Master and slave, daddy to boy or daddy to girl, even just some people are just dom and sub, you know. There's you know, if we're gonna go with some sort of clown stuff, some DNS people that I've met that are clown players, they have a ringmaster and they have their clowns. It is great. There's so many different ways, but it really is that somebody is going to be setting some rules that need to be followed, and that there is some sort of disciplining that will happen if there is some good things happening or some bad things happening, and that there is always some way to get out of it and leave it as needed to. And then going from the receiving side too, these people that are receiving are going to be well aware of these rules, but they're going to be writing these rules together to make sure that there's something that is possible for their physique, their mental state, their traumas, their anything. So this receiving side has to make sure that these things are things they can receive. And then they can also work about, you know, towing the line with the rules that were agreed, with their figure of authority, to see where it goes. It's a very synergetic back and forth, which I think a lot of people forget. A lot of people think, oh no, dominant does all the work. They're the ones that set everything. No. Submissive also need to be active in this process. You can't just sit there and be like, oh yes, I'm going to follow all the rules, or else, you know, the role-playing kind of breaks because there's no role-playing being done.
Also, you can be a passive submissive. That doesn't mean you're doing less work. That means you are still putting in, you know, the work to create the boundaries within, like, in what ways you're going to be passive. And that still means that you are both going to be checking in with each other. I think we hear this term, like, S&M is what we hear a lot and don't think about it. And nobody actually breaks down the fact that, like, there are other words in this acronym and there are other ways of interpreting them and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
The self-locking, by the way, so cool. Sorry, I interrupted you.
No, you're good.
So cool.
This discipline needs to come from a lot of ways. And like I said, part of the receiving side of DNS, our discipline as a whole, is that you are trying your best to follow these rules or making sure that you're staying accountable when the rules aren't followed. So like you said, you can be a passive submissive. Being a passive submissive doesn't mean that you're doing nothing, but you're trying your best to, you know, just follow within the rules that you have and trying to be the best boy, girl, person, whatever you are. And you're trying to receive praise. You want to make sure that, look, I am following all the rules. Like, person that is a figure of authority, praise me. Praise me for being really, really good and doing all the things right and following this contract to a T.
Yeah.
Because if the figure of authority doesn't recognize the good things as much as they recognize the bad things, then again, the role play breaks. There's no DNS actually going on. It's just a submissive trying their hardest and the dominant just being like, all right, cool.
Yeah, exactly. Well, also, I mean, like, there's also a lot of play that can be... Was that your chair?
Yeah, that was my chair.
You had to look to be sure. There is also a lot of solo play. And like, for example, you're talking about self-locking. By the way, guys, if you want to self-lock, if you want to hold your own keys, if you want to wear, you know, a collar or a padlock or whatever, and that's yours and you're the one who's in charge of that, that is just as valid. I think a lot of the time, I think it's typically sort of an older generation, you know, that I'm generalizing, but still, who'll say these kind of things where it's like, I don't know, they'll try and invalidate that and be like, oh, well, you don't have a sir, or you don't have, or do you meant to do it this way? No, you do it the way that you want to do it. And like, if nobody else is holding your keys or, you know, whatever else, that is fine. You can still engage in a form of play that's exciting. That is just with yourself. That is also totally valid.
And there is something to say about tradition and context whenever it comes to that. That these people are saying these things comes from a place of wanting to hold on and make sure that people understand that this was the context for it.
Yeah.
Before these locks were given in such a way, it is a very respectful thing and you should treat it very respectfully. And I can agree. This is a culture that we are being involved in whenever it comes to domination and submission, just generally the BDSM culture as a whole. It was developed. It is a culture that we're going into. We want to make sure not to appropriate the culture, but to respect what the traditions and context of things were. However, some of these people do get a little heated whenever their traditions aren't followed so exactly as they were before, or they are not adapting to the newer norms in the ways that we people that come into the culture and respect it and start starting to morph it to adapt to the modern day or to whatever new devices or, you know, new behavior patterns across the world and all of that. If it doesn't adapt, then the context is worth nothing. Everything's going to die as far as that culture goes.
Well, also, and there's not one culture. There's so many, you know, this is just stuff that people decided together in very small groups, spread out on a huge scale with so much distance in between them, and everyone is slightly different and everyone treats it slightly differently. And at the end of the day, these are still personal things. But yeah, there's a reason that these things were born. We're very fortunate these days to live in a time where we have access to information at our fingertips. We have access to finding people like us who share similar interests. We, you know, can much more safely navigate through this world. So, you know, there is a lot of these things that I'm very mindful of respecting, but then I'm also like, anybody who really feels like they can tell somebody else how to enjoy this very personal thing, it doesn't help to educate somebody in why these things are considered sacred to a lot of people if you're sort of badgering. But whatever. I mean,
look, and it's true.
I'm generalizing again, because it's not like, you know, kids, get off my lawn. You know, I think that's a perception thing as well. And I think also there is a big thing. I talk a lot about, you know, the lost generation, that there is a big information transference gap in a lot of these traditions and that kind of thing. But
and it is very, it is very important to talk to the ones that did live through that.
Yes.
The ones that were part of the culture as it was being established, as it was being changed, as it modernized. There's just so much context there that is missing. It isn't written. It isn't recorded. It isn't anywhere. And it's really hard to find these things outside of places in which these people convene, whether they're conventions, bar nights, leather bars, blah. We need to really try our best to dig into that, because it's very important if we want to be a part of this community.
Mm, agreed. I've got a goofy question for you now, and it's about those balloons. Have you ever seen the intricacy of balloon bondage?
I have seen some. It is not something that I get exposed to very often. Social media doesn't really put it in my feed, but I've seen some.
Okay, I'll get it for you. I think it's cool because twisting balloons is, I mean, I can't do that. That is like a very, very difficult skill. And then B, bondage is a very, very difficult skill. And then combining these two very, very difficult skills with a material that is notoriously difficult to work with, but also surprisingly very, very strong and very effective. I love when people do weird, wacky, creative shit, and especially something as goofy looking as balloon bondage. Also, by the way, what do you mean clowns? How many clowns do you know?
4 or 5, I think, that I'm aware of.
Yeah, that's right. Sounds about right.
It's not a very big group. No, not in the slightest.
Not a very big group, like, publicly, but you would be so surprised. It is crazy to me. I mean, like, just before we were starting, I got a brand new message on Recon. Somebody was asking me how I keep my big shoes on. That was their opener, and I thought it was quite hilarious. But, like, every day I'm getting this stuff, and it's like, people, I don't know, it's one of the kinks that I think people are the most secretive about. It is crazy to me how many people I know, and how many people I know that a lot of people know who are like really into this, but they don't want to talk about it publicly or talk about it on their social media or whatever. And I think it's really, really interesting. I see kind of things like, you know, I think pup play was a big one. Before that, I think it was, you know, kind of latex, and before that, leather. And right now I feel like it's ABDL. That's kind of like the new beacon that, like, everybody's going, oh, this is okay. Oh, this is cool now. So all of a sudden, oh yeah, all these people are into it. And it's like, yeah, people are always into a lot of things. But until, you know, one person makes it cool or whatever. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like if I can make clowning and kink cool enough, then maybe, you know, we see a lot more people.
Going back to that trauma-informed sort of thing that I brought up, though, there have been so many related things of being scared of the makeup or or all of that. Along with that, too, for whatever reason, some clowns have been given a bad rap from the very beginning, I think.
Hey, but I think those things are connected, honestly.
I think that they might be too. So it is definitely a very hard thing to get out there. Though, to be fair, whenever it comes to topics of age regression and diaper loving, there is, of course, a larger discussion as well, dealing with what sort of intercourse is happening. Same with pet play, of course. They managed to overcome those, at least in the major mainstream of the fetish and kink scene. So here's to hoping that for sure the clowns can also break through.
Yeah, man. I mean, it seems like any kind of weirdo should be able to, right? And I don't know. It's interesting to me how it's like, you know, you mention any fetish and it'll raise some eyebrows. And it's really funny to me because it's like, well, what the hell? What are you interested in? Because I bet I could raise an eyebrow at it and call you weird. Like, you know, it's so funny to me. Like, if you sit down and talk to a puppy, you're like, oh, they're cool. You know, if you sit down and talk to an ABDL, you're like, and I don't know, I guess because I always thought I was the weirdest. I always was like, oh, the pups seem like this kind of clique. And then I was like, oh, wait, they're silly. And then I was like, the diaper boys seem to be having fun. Like, that looks cool. Like, I thought that was cool, you know? Like, I didn't think that was, like, gross or weird or like, silly or embarrassing. I was like, oh, God, that looks so cool.
See, people just need to look at things with a much more kind eye and a much more open perspective to the way that people are having fun.
Because everybody's weird, man. Everybody's weird. You collect stamps? Hey, you're weird. You like trains? Trains are big in this country. I don't know why people love
trains. Trains are pretty big here in the United States as well.
Yeah. The train people
I just talked to a train person. Yes.
Let me see, like, I mean, it's wonderful. Like, I love, you know, I love when I have a friend that, like, you know, suddenly lets slip something I didn't know about them. And they're kind of like, oh, yeah, well, I'm actually kind of into it. Like, I like birds. And I'm like, what? That's so cool. Great. Tell me about it. You know, like, yeah, like, what? You know, and it's like, if we could just be, like, I don't know, more excited about each other's quirks, I think the world would be a better place in general.
And like I said, it's about kindness. It's not necessarily that you have to be like the most like performatively excited person, but just in them saying like, I'm really interested in this thing that I don't think others think is really cool. And you say, sure. Well, what do you think is really cool about it? Like, let me know what you find so amazing about this. Let me find some interest in it. Let's find some common ground and let's expand upon this so it can be something that is, again, growing for myself and growing for you.
Yeah.
There's just a lot of understanding that needs to happen between people when it comes to that.
There's somebody that I've had on this podcast. He's such a wonderful human being. Support Pup Cooper, who, I mean, he does so much work in and out of the community. He's a counselor, but he was telling me stories about like wearing his pup hoods in public spheres and how like it's really interesting when you can just be you and the person next to you does not need to get it, but they see that that's you. And it's like, yeah, you can wear your pup hood when we hang out. Or, you know, like I've got a friend who came out to their roommate that they were in ABDL during lockdown. And their roommate was like, dude, I don't care what you wear around the house. Like, you want to play Mario Kart? Like, cool. You can wear your diaper. It's like, who cares? And I think that's all it is. You know, it's just being like, I'm me, you're you. And both of those things are fine.
And then, of course, it's also about establishing boundaries. I think that people should also speak up about some of those things, such as, like, if somebody's wearing, like, a pup hood, like, if you're not comfortable with them coming up and cuddling with you, like, tell them, like you can wear your hood. Just, I get that you do dog things. I do not want to interact with your dog things.
Hey, look, I do clown things. And, like you brought up, people are scared of clowns. So it happens actually, not a lot, but every now and again, if I'm out and about, now I'm quite, you know, confident just being at events and stuff, I can normally pick up on it, you know, or I'll see that someone's uncomfortable. Guess what? I'm not going to go talk to them. I'm not going to go bother them because that's clearly a boundary. And if somebody says to me, like, I feel a little uncomfortable, that's all it takes. A lot of the time I feel fine with you, but I'm normally scared of clowns. I'm like, ah, okay, well, that's great because you have recognized that I'm a person and not the thing that you're afraid of. And if I'm not wearing makeup, which oftentimes I cannot be bothered, I'll do stuff like, you know, if my nose isn't glued on or whatever, I'll take it off just so that they can see that I'm a person and that I'm chill and then be like, okay, I'm going to put this back on now, you know. And like, yeah, if I was going around like spooking people, that would be really, really... Not cool. I wanted to ask about a lot of the stuff that you do, because I was looking at your Linktree and seeing all the stuff. You mentioned to me recently, was it recently? I don't know. One of your messages, you said you managed a large event recently, but I can't even remember how recent that was. How did that go and what was that?
Yes, it just passed. It was 2 weeks ago. It's called the Austin Rubber Roundup. It is gathering of rubber lovers, whether it's latex or neoprene or any of the other alternatives for those that can't interact with latex and latex byproducts, and just generally kinksters and fetishists.
Hell yeah.
We do it downtown in Austin. It's off of 9th Street and Red River for anybody that's familiar with Austin. There's the Hotel Indigo. We've been doing it there for the last 3 years, and it's a small convention, 300 at most. And we have panels all day Saturday for education. We have socials all day on Friday. We have our bigger rooms to have a dinner on Saturday night with a keynote speaker. We have Friday night, in which we try our best to do some orientation, some sort of like a gift earning, like sponsor given gift baskets or gift items, in order to be able to give them out to anybody that is interested in them by playing a game, trying to make sure that something is available for people to do during all these times. And we have our bar nights and at least one play party. We're trying to make sure that a play party can happen every night instead, and maybe expanding a little bit into Thursday night to encourage more people to come in on Friday as well. And then Sunday we have our nice big old lunch or brunch or whatever people want to call it before people have to head out, and we finish it off with some show tunes. So
whoa, that's great. That's awesome. It also sounds like a lot of work, so well done, because that sounds awesome. Speaking of, because I know that you do the Men in Rope. I saw one of the things was the Shibari study, and I was like, wow, that looks cool. But I also saw that you have a mentoring project in Austin. What is that?
So let's go ahead and talk about the Men in Rope a little bit, and I'll go ahead and get to the mentorship program too. The Men in Rope is Austin Men in Rope is the group that I've been leading since June of 2019 here in Austin. We have a very lively rope scene, but the rope scene is intimidating for those that identify as masculine in some way, shape, or form and want to be a rope submissive.
Okay.
So my group is all about being an intentional safe space, giving space for those mask-leaning individuals to be able to be submissives. We welcome all genders, anybody that wants to come in, but
awesome.
Anybody that is not mask-leaning, we encourage them to take the dominant position to allow for the men to be in rope. And so, yes, we have our every second Wednesday, we have our rope lab, our studio study. It is a collaborative thing. Everybody's welcome to tie, teach something as they want. Think about it as a very like free form sort of like, these are topics we want to go over, these are topics we don't, and people kind of match up as they need to. Nobody needs a partner for it. It's all a good time. And then I try my best to do a social at the end of the month on fourth weekends, usually at the Austin Eagle, to get some lunch and to talk rope and just generally like look over books and stuff like that. So that's that.
Whoa, I mean, like, wow. Okay, so I saw that and I was like, oh, that seems like a lot. And then turns out this other con you're running in Austin is a lot. And then turns out you've got more going on. I mean, this is amazing. This sounds like such amazing work you're doing.
Yeah, and I agree that it is a lot of fun, and I find myself wanting to do this. This is a community that I love very much. It is very dear to me. And there is a lot of interest in the area to have these things happen, as I've been meeting up with kinksters here in town, wherever they may be. It is that they need that sort of space, they need that sort of encouragement, they need that sort of nurturing in order for them to be able to receive some of this more like standard sort of practice that is done in on a larger scale, not just local to Austin, but maybe across the state or across the nation or even internationally. I try my best to bring back things that I've learned from all of these panels and conventions that I end up going to, and make sure that people here can at least hear them and maybe try to adopt them and maybe have interest in going out statewide, region-wide, nationwide, or maybe international sorts of events to grow themselves as well as a part of this community or as a part of themselves in their own practices.
Wow. And so tell me more about the mentoring project.
So this one is a pilot program right now, and it's been in the works for the last couple of years. I've been talking to a few different critter leaders that I know about what seem to be the topics that need need covering whenever it comes to the whole critter sphere, as it comes down to. So I got together with a couple of title holders here in the area, and then we got a couple of other leaders, so we have a total of 6 mentors altogether. And I had written up, for the most part, a generic plan of about 8 sessions. And all of these sessions, each one, we go over a specific topic for each one of these sessions that we have throughout this mentorship program. And we start from the basics, right? The very first session was defining everything, making sure that people know what animal roleplay is, what the different sort of umbrellas under it are, what it means to be a pup, what it means to be a kitten, any other sort of role playing that people specifically do, what it means to be a part of the pet play community and what pet play is as a whole and its context and tradition, and then going towards the sort of new label that people are starting to lean towards, which is the critter label, in order to be more inclusive for anybody that maybe doesn't do the DNS stuff, that maybe is not a pup or is not a kitten or is not a pony and doesn't have that established community. So anyways, that was an overview of the first session. And that kind of goes towards other topics such as continuing on with headspace, physical limitations, features, and taking care of yourself, power dynamics, and all of that, environmental awareness as far as like how you get involved in different communities, what places you can do things, what places you can't, and how to make sure that you will be safe and not cause harm to yourself or to others while you're there. Next one is all about inclusivity, acceptance, like being able to not only accept like people of all genders, sizes, colors, backgrounds, blah, 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 but also being able to incorporate that sort of inclusiveness and acceptance within yourself, because there are things that you might have shame or trauma or fear or something within there that you need to also explore. Seventh session is about just general community, how you can get connected in the way of what are the groups, what are the events, what is it that you can plan out, how you can meet up other people through what apps and blah, blah, blah. Because as you can see, it's just kind of been expanding from, you know, your self-exploration to including others and being external. And the last session is all about moshing. It's supposed to be a mosh, letting them know how to mosh, having a mosh there, and it's a celebratory mosh because congrats, you've gotten through the whole program. Yay. And it's not just about attending these sessions, it's also about doing some assignments in between. We've set assignments between each one of these sessions in order to explore all of these different topics on their own by giving them a starting point. So for the first one, the assignment was give us a small write-up as to how you feel your headspace for critterness is, and how you would describe it and what all is surrounding it, right? Give us like a semi-concise description of what pet play is to you. And what is it? Even the most recent one, which we just finished our fourth session, that most recent one had the assignment of, you know, you've learned about headspace, you learned about what critter stuff is, you've learned about your physical limitations and all the healthiness whenever it comes to all of that and consent and blah. So how would you establish a contract and how would you modify a contract after having learned all of these things for you yourself to have a good power dynamic? So, you know, we're just going through that, and it should end at the end of April or beginning of May. And
this is like pup school. This is like pup college.
There are other mentorship programs out there for all these other different kinks. I don't think that I've seen a mentorship program specifically for critters or anybody in the animal role-playing sphere. So I hope to make available to other leaders that may be wanting to establish some sort of mentorship program in their own areas and see if this works out for them as well, because it is a good thing to try to establish some sort of base like knowledge that maybe all of us critters that really want to be involved in the community, really want to be leaders, or just generally want to grow as critters ourselves into it. And can't forget that this is all of this that I'm saying also includes handlers, owners, trainers, caregivers.
Of course. Yeah.
Whatever, because they are very included, but people always forget, like, the people that are just people that are there with like a leash or just watching over these creatures with maybe with nothing, they're just watching over them. They are handlers, they are trainers, they are caregivers. They like being involved with us, and they want to make sure that we can be protected, that we have the headspace, that they can set rules for us, and that or we can set rules with them and they can uphold them and all of that. So
awesome. Wow, that is like, yeah, wow, makes me want to set up a
yay, clown college.
Hell yeah. I'm gonna clown college. You've been holding me back long enough. Okay, cool. I wanted to ask you, actually, Would you like to talk about what being on the A spectrum is like for you?
Yeah. So we always start with definitions, right? Let's make sure that everybody knows what asexuality is. Mm-hmm. And asexuality is the lack of or the very minimal amount of sexual attraction that is experienced towards others. I say this because a lot of people ask, what does asexuality mean to you? And I feel like they're more asking, what is your experience and how are these other knobs that are involved whenever it comes to the sexual mm-hmm. spectrum, sexuality spectrum?
Great word.
Who are you attracted to? How is your libido?
Sure, right.
Do you experience sex? And all of that. So by base definition, anybody under the ace umbrella will be somebody that has some sort of limiting factor whenever it comes to finding somebody sexually appealing or sexually attracted. Mm-hmm. A lot of people try to ask me like, well, what does it mean to be sexually attracted? And my definition for that, I haven't seen it necessarily in the mainstream because maybe people are trying not to be so limiting or whatever. But I like to make sure that people know like it is that you're wanting to interact one with the other person's sort of genital regions or two. Something that seems taboo in your society that is seen as sexual and that's it's taboo. Mm-hmm. If you have found that you want to do that and you have found this person appealing and your libido is directed towards them in order to interact with them in this way, that is sexual attraction.
Yeah.
And so, yes, for me in my case, I wear the asexual label proudly because it is counted on one hand how many times I have felt sexual attraction towards another. It's like at all, right? there is so little sexual attraction that I feel that it really leaves my mind. And mm-hmm. honestly, my ace-ness shows every so often whenever people point out like, oh yeah, that person's really attractive. I'm like, yeah, they are. And then they're like, no, but like they're really attractive. And I'm like, oh, dude, let's go talk to them. I'll be your wingman.
yeah. This is like my whole life. People being like, oh yeah, that person's attractive. And I'm like, which one? Who? How? What? Okay. Oh, right. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know where I exist in this whole thing, but I'm very content being just clown because every time I've tried to like describe myself beyond that, I'm like, I don't know. And then people are like, oh, do you think that you're Demi? It's like, well, look, if I did, then, you know, sometimes, yeah, maybe. But like, if I did, then I would, you know.
Yes. So
I'm clown sexual, dude. Like, that's it.
To expand on that, though, whenever people ask what it means to them, maybe labels are something that they're looking for. The asexual umbrella has a series of labels that people have chosen to adopt, such as like abrosexual.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Sure.
Specifically, if you translate all the roots, it just means a sort of like flippant or elegant or floaty sexual in the way of that they are very sexually fluid. They could be attracted to one gender one day. Yep. They could be attracted to another gender another day. They could feel no attraction at a certain point. Again, demisexual is something that you brought up. Demisexual is under the asexual spectrum. And that is that their limiting factor is that they need some sort of intimacy. Intimacy does not guarantee sexual attraction, but intimacy is something that is required before they may experience sexual attraction to somebody.
I mean, then there's gray ace and like...
Yes, these are different labels that people have in order to be able to maybe more accurately define what people ask for whenever they're saying, well, what is your asexual experience? That way people can more knowingly have some sort of like, okay, cool, I think I get it, right?
Right. Well, it's also like, yeah, these terms will always, like, there will always be new ones. There will always be terms that change in their meaning because as time changes, our understanding of life as humans changes. And so, you know, people will always describe themselves with new words. And I think it's also important to remember, like, how you want to define yourself or describe yourself is totally okay. And if nobody around you, like, agrees, it's not their business. Like, it's not up to them. Do you know what I mean?
Well, and here's the thing about it, too, is that people don't realize that in the ace spectrum and everything, we are using all of these descriptors because they are things that the allosexuals or the people that mm-hmm. are on the normative sort of side of sexual attraction experience, whether it's homosexual, heterosexual, bisexual, blah, right? They also are experiencing these, but they don't explore them as much because they don't have to question them and they don't have to explore all of these different attractions that they experience. They don't have to explore why they feel attraction towards a certain person as much as they don't towards some other type of people. Or there's all these questions that we as asexuals have to ask ourselves because we've been given them by society as to like,
yep.
Well, you like so-and-so, what is it that you like about them? Or, yep. Well, why don't you want to marry or fuck or yep. have a kid with so-and-so?
Yep.
So all of these different knobs and definitions that we have made as asexuals and coined, they apply so much towards the allosexuals as well, but the allos just don't think about them. Like, people have the assumption that aces are sexually repulsed. So are allos. Like, if they've formed some sort of trauma, like if they just specifically find something really gross, like body fluids or something like that, they may be sexually repulsed. But that doesn't mean that they don't experience sexual attraction on a very normal way. Like, they normally experience it.
This is what I mean. Like, society makes it hard. Like, it's so simple to just be you, and like the fact that you have to back up being you with, well, no, I did think about that, but actually I still feel this way. It's like, whatever. Okay, do you know what though, I did read your recon.
We're going back to recon, we love that.
No, because I remember you mentioned you said something that I wanted to ask you about.
Look, just go on your phone, look on the recon, it's okay.
God, but that'll take time. No, you mentioned aesthetics. That was it. You mentioned aesthetics and physical presence and that kind of thing. And I think this was also in line with like chemistry, and chemistry I totally get, because that's like, as in, these are the things that like get you interested in play. Chemistry I get, absolutely. But what then is it for you that is the sort of aesthetic or physical presence part?
Okay, cool. Yeah, so definitely, I think that whenever it comes to attraction, and for me, I've thought about this a lot, right?
Yep.
I don't have specific characteristics for anybody that I find sexually attractive. Mm-hmm. But there are still like specific sorts of boundaries that I have for people that I'm going to tie up, or the people that I'm going to be involved with whenever it comes to pet play, or whenever it comes towards, you know, dominating somebody or being a submissive to somebody else. And I'd say aesthetics and presence, like in-person physical presence, as very generic terms. But as far as aesthetics, like aesthetics can give off signals as to what the other behavior that they have in their lives are. Mm-hmm. And I generally like somebody that has a well-kept appearance at the very least. Like they try minimally, you know. they're gonna try to make their hair look good. They're gonna try to make like they're gonna wash their face so it's not like greasy, okay. Or they're actively like
so they don't smell. Got it.
Like, part of it is about hygiene. You are very right. And some people really just don't follow hygiene, and it's like, that's just not a healthy thing to not follow some sort of regular hygiene, right? Like, you should shower or bathe regularly. You should be sure to try to upkeep some of your appearances, like these sorts of things, right? And then whenever it comes,
I do have one. It's please brush your teeth. I didn't realize that was a thing for me. I didn't realize that was like a pet peeve. But I've had a couple times now where I've gone oof. Yeah.
Well, also, like, there are some people too, where we're talking about scents, that they don't wash in between their cheeks, and that smell comes through very, very obviously. Like, especially whenever you notice a difference, whenever they sit down and then all of a sudden they stand up, and you're like,
I feel like such a jerk, because I have a friend who's really into musk, really into smells, that kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
and in order to be stinky for them, I was under the impression that I was supposed to not shower for a week. I'm a sweaty boy. My poor partner was putting up with this, and I was like, yeah, I'm doing it for a friend. And that friend then was like, you sociopath, what? No, just don't scrub your pits, be like a decent human being, and then like have a natural like scent about you. Don't just like completely sanitize every single. And I was like, oh god, I've been outside, I've been out the house in this week, and very aware that like any people around me are gonna be aware of what's going on. That was so stupid.
And yeah, it happens. And also, there are unscented soaps and unscented deodorants, and
yes, there's lots of things you can do, not what I did. I was like, how do people do this? They don't, you crazy person.
But some people, they just don't know that. And I have definitely come across those people that they don't understand.
Hey, listen, I've done it now. Yeah, it was deliberate. It was stupid. If that's you, like, hey, you're not an idiot, because, well, then I am too. It's the people who don't do it anyway and aren't really real.
Yes, that's we were talking about the stupidity of things of or knowing things and then choosing not to do them.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what covers my aesthetic. Like, okay. Look like you're taking care of yourself. I will probably have very little problem as long as you look like you're taking care of yourself.
Yeah, I think like because I'm that whole thing I think was sort of in the context of rope play. You were saying like this is what I like when I bind someone or something like that.
It's a very sensual thing. You are like right there next to the person, and you are touching them, and you are like right in their space, and are right in your space. This is why I say like there has to be some sort of like just general like take care of yourself.
And yeah.
I can do this.
You've just reminded me of a rope session that I had that was, a bit unfortunate, which is a shame because I do like the person, but like I really I love a good struggle, right? Like I really love to try and like fight against those restraints so that I can feel them. And yeah, this person challenged me to like escape my bindings, and I did, and it was such a letdown. It was a real like oh. And I thought at the time, like, I thought they were teasing me to be like, I'm gonna bind you harder because I know you can get out of this. And they were like, no, escape if you want. And then I did, and they were like, oh, okay. It was very disappointing. It was very strange.
And that goes into the psychology of roleplay too. There are some people that bind and they know that they're binding in such a way that you can get out, but it's about the dominance that they have in saying like, yeah, you can get out if you want to, but then you're losing out on your experience. So
yeah, I don't know. I think there was a miscommunication about exactly how that was supposed to go.
But... Oh, 100%. Yes, it sounds like it. So.
I just like, as you were saying that, I was like, oh my God, yeah, I remember how weird that was.
Well, here also, you can segue into the topic of what I meant by, you know, body presence, like physical presence. And it's the fact that people carry themselves in certain ways, they talk in certain ways, their body posture, their blah, blah, blah. Like, I just want somebody that is confident in, like, what they want and what they need. They're not just, like, meek and coy and being like, oh, well, I kind of want this, but I kind of want that. But, like, that sort of, like, lower body posture, lack of confidence, it throws red flags to me in which I shouldn't be playing with this person. I'd be willing to mentor them, educate them, make sure that they know what they want. But play is not it for this person. This person needs something else aside from that. So, that's where I stand with that.
Okay, cool. Okay, I'm just looking at the time and I realize we're like going over. I'm going to have fun editing. I forgot that there's one thing you're supposed to do. Every week. And yet I've been doing this for how many years now? I like to end my episodes on a high because sometimes, you know, we can go to places that are kind of heavy or we can go to dark places or whatever. So I just like every episode to end on like a positive thing. So I was supposed to ask you to think of a positive thing, literally anything that's made you smile recently, as like your yay for the day to end on. And you now have like 30 seconds to think about it while I'm going to do mine first, because for once I actually have one. Sorry to spring homework on you at a pressing time like this. But my yay for the day is going to be this Instagram account that has been entertaining me. It's like not even to do with kink. This is like just this week has been making me laugh so much. Her account is called Laura Ramoso, like as in her first name is Laura and her surname is Ramoso, but she's combined them. Oh my God, it's the funniest shit. Like, she just does these skits, and the best ones are where she's just imitating her parents because she has an Italian father and a German mother. And like, it's so stupid, and it has brought me so much joy this week just watching her be her German mother, which is very, very funny. So if you want a good laugh, go check her out. I'll put the thing in the show notes. But that's going to be my yay for the day. My yay for the day is normally like, I'm like going to go to this thing. So like, I feel like that's a good one. That's a helpful one. That's a joy spreading one.
Yeah.
Have you got one?
Yeah, absolutely. I got to go out earlier in the week, and it was just a very nice day. It was nice and cool. It was probably around like 68 or 69 degrees Fahrenheit. So for those in Celsius, I'm assuming it's probably around like 16 or 17 or something like that.
That's hotter than... That's like
then
20.
Was it lower than 15? Was it higher than 15? Somewhere in there.
20 is like hot.
Well, then it was probably a little bit lower than that. Okay. I know it's somewhere around the 15-ish area.
I love the way that you're saying, like, this is a cool day because you are from Texas. I was like, cool? Cool? Well,
yes.
Why would anyone want that?
Context. But it was in the evening as well, so there was
a lot of
trees. We got to go out to this place that had a deck right next to some overlooking water to the city. We have a river that runs through it. So we were just there. We had a couple of drinks. We were chatting. All the lights were nice and bright. The stars were out. The wind was blowing. It was just nice. It made me happy. Simple things like that make me happy.
Oh, that's so beautiful. Oh, fuck off. I was so proud to like actually have, like, because I normally think of one and I'm like, oh, I had a nice time. That's beautiful. No, I love that. That's great. There is something really, I finally, from like my whole life, I was a city person, and finally living somewhere where I can see stars has actually done wonders for my, and the moon, man. The moon actually like lights the outside.
Yes.
I've never known that to be the case.
City boy.
Oh. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, that was beautiful. So anyway, thank you so, so much for doing this with me. Where can people find you online?
Yes, so I have a Linktree. If you look up Linktree/BoundManLove, BoundManLove, that you can find all of my social media there. BoundManLove is a general username that I use. The only one that I think I don't have it for is probably my Twitch, my Instagram, because they banned my old account.
Oh, hey, welcome to the club.
They want and probably my Tumblr or something like that. So, but yes, the link
tree. Yeah. I wanted to ask what streaming on Twitch was like, because I was like, yeah, he does that as well. By the way, sorry, just for everyone at home, this puppy in front of me on my screen, as he was spelling, just signed with one hand each of those letters. Was that ASL?
Yeah.
Okay, great. So another thing you can do that I can't. Very cool. Talented puppy. Yeah, I'll link that in the show notes below. As always, you can find me on we're gonna cut that out. As always, you can find me at tsota on Twitter and on Blue Sky. Pup Ace, thank you so much for chatting with me today, and join us next week as we go under the big top.
Yeah.
Hey guys, Barney here with a little update. I want to give a quick thanks to AB Universe for sponsoring The Big Top. Taking over production responsibilities has been a huge undertaking, and I'm extremely grateful to have such a fantastic sponsor, whose products I have used for years and can personally vouch for. You can now use my promo code BIGTOP to get 10% off your order at abuniverse.com. That's abuniverse.com. Thanks again to ABU for sponsoring this podcast.